This is Seattle's Morning News. Dave Ross with Colleen O'Brien. Saturday here in Seattle at Safeco Field, there's going to be a crowd of about 40,000 people. The Mariners are not going to be in town. They're going to be in Los Angeles trying to beat the Angels. Who will be in town is Russell M. Nelson, who is the president of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, which most people call the Mormons. Now, as many of you know, Cairo Radio is owned by Bonneville International, which in turn is owned by a corporation owned by the Mormon Church. So there's a pretty close corporate connection. They don't tell us what to report on or what to say, and nobody ordered me to do this interview. But I've always found religion interesting. I report fairly regularly on my own church, the Catholic Church. Unfortunately, it's been in the news way too much lately. But sometimes I'll quote from a sermon that Father Ryan will give at St. James when it's on a current issue. And I want to do that now with Boyd Matheson, who works for Deseret News, which is also a church-owned organization. Formerly worked for Senator Mike Lee.
That's correct.
Well, he's a tough boss, isn't he?
He's a great boss, actually.
And you are now the opinion editor of the Deseret News. So, first of all, I wouldn't have known who Russell M. Nelson was. I'm betting most of my listeners who are not Mormon wouldn't know either. He is the 17th president of the church, and he is 94 now.
He is 94, and I think he's just warming up. Yeah, he's keeping a pace that would put most millennials to shame.
He's traveling around the world now doing these things?
That's right. His global ministry tours have taken him to Israel, to Africa, India, Hong Kong. He's been all across Canada and the United States. We'll be down in South America, I believe, later this year. So he's just keeping a breakneck pace. He still skis, snow skis. I think he's capable of doing black diamond.
So what
diamond
does he do? I mean, is this like a Billy Graham revival that's going to happen at Safeco Field, or what is it? What brings so many people there?
So it will be primarily members of the church will be there and to hear a message. It's a kind of a fireside chat devotional from second base at Safeco. And I think what he's really going to do is he's going to continue to focus on his focus, which is we need to be better neighbors. We need to be better friends. It's about serving people, not just in your own congregation, but in your community, recognizing that the answer to most of the challenges the world faces today is not going to come from the marbled halls of Congress or from government, right, but from people. It's people helping people.
I think that's pretty obvious to me anyway. Just about every problem government solves, you can trace back to a failure of family somewhere along the way, right?
That's right.
So, do you think that just exhorting people, though, to be better neighbors is enough?
No, because it's not just the words that matter. President Nelson really lives by a quote by St. Francis of Assisi, who said, always preach the gospel. When necessary, use words. It really is about going out there. And it is the real focus, this idea of ministry and looking out for one another. And has led to some very interesting partnerships with the church. The church recently announced a major initiative with the NAACP where they're going to go into churches all across the East, not churches of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, but Baptist churches, Methodist churches, and actually teach self-reliance and entrepreneurial skills to help people in these communities, gain that upward mobility and that ability to really maximize their potential.
Okay, now we occasionally see religious leaders like the Pope get involved in politics. He's certainly talked about some of the issues involving President Trump. Popes have come out, especially this Pope, talking about the downside of our economic system, the inequality caused by capitalism. So what about President Nelson? Does he speak out on this kind of stuff?
Yeah, he speaks out on not so much in terms of the politics. It's really about the principles that drive it and really making sure that there's so much divisiveness in the nation's capital right now. And that is why the solutions are not coming from there. But I think what he really recognizes is that it's, the loud and strident voices at both ends of the political spectrum usually keep us a safe distance from having the conversation that would actually solve the problem. And so he's very interested in making sure that we are doing the right things to sustain families and to neighborhoods and communities. I think the important thing to recognize is that politics has failed, but America will not. And it won't because our politicians have never led. never led, even back to the beginning. We talk about the Declaration of Independence as this, you know, great document, which it is. But we have to remember it was a lagging document, not a leading document. The Revolutionary War had been going a year and a half. Or Jackie Robinson breaks the color barrier in Major League Baseball in 1947. 17 years later, Congress got around to doing meaningful civil rights legislation. And so we have to just remember that it's community and culture that lead and the politicians follow. And so the message from President Nelson is going to be just that, that this is about family. This is about home. This is about neighborhood. This is about community. And we're going to see that again. You know, we've got a hurricane, blistering through, and government has a role to play there. But the real first responders is going to be a neighbor helping a neighbor.
Exactly.
It's going to be Catholic Charities showing up. It's going to be communities coming together. And that is America at its finest, because they're not the government's brothers and sisters. They're ours.
Yeah. The first responders are always people who just happen to be there at the time.
Yeah,
if you're talking about the real first responders.
Yeah.
All right. Let's talk about the church itself, because when you talk about the Mormon church, people think, okay, multiple wives, you know, sister wives, the TV series, treatment of black people. Has your church had to come to a reckoning on its issues the way my own church, the Catholic Church, is still coming to a reckoning on its issues of sex abuse?
So I think as you look at the path of the church, the practice of polygamy was ended in 1890. Interesting how some things stay around long after the fact. So that's an 1890 issue, and really move forward. In terms of the African American community, full blessings of the priesthood, that was in 1978. And there are a few organizations that have done more in the black community, not just in the U.S., but around the world, to really lift those communities, to provide humanitarian effort, to provide training and skills. And so I think everyone has to move forward in terms of
Do churches who are supposedly inspired by God, linked in some way to God, make mistakes like that?
Because there are men and women who are imperfect, and so that's just part of moving things forward. Is that it's if you're ever stuck just in the past, looking in reverse, you're rarely going to be able to chart a path forward to a better place.
Why do those well-dressed Mormon missionaries come to my house every year trying to convert me? I know it's because I'm within like two blocks of the stake, but but I see them coming down the street, and I always have a little talk with them, but they seem very concerned about me.
And they are. And it's an amazing thing for in an age of selfies and narcissistic young people who, spend more time taking selfies than they do anything else. To have, 18 to 23 year olds out there really serving, trying to make a difference, trying to connect with people on issues that matter or have conversations that matter. The end goal is not always just a conversion or a join the church moment. It's let's help you be a better Catholic. Let's help this community be a better community. And so often in our very rapid fire world today, we're not having those conversations anymore.
Yeah. They really wanted me to read the Book of Mormon, though. Is the Book of Mormon going to make me a better Catholic? I'm not even sure reading the Bible made me a better Catholic, because there's some stuff in there I just do not agree with.
Yeah, well, and it's applying the principles is always the test. It's one thing to read. There's a big myth out there that knowledge is power. Knowledge is only potential power. It only becomes power as we actually use it and apply it. And of course, the focus of the missionaries is to focus on Jesus Christ and His mission and to minister the way He ministered. He wasn't just going to the popular folks. He was going to those who had been neglected or ignored, those who had been despised and persecuted. And we need more of that. When we look at things like homelessness, I know there are issues here in Seattle that really matter. We got to get comfortable having uncomfortable conversations about opioids and drug addiction and homelessness and all of those things. And that's really what this is all about, is how do we get to that space where we can have an elevated conversation about some of those hard things?
Why is it always two young men? I never see two young women.
No, actually, there's a vast number of, in fact, the numbers are rising. More young women are going now than ever before.
Do they all like it? I mean, because when you know, you're that age, and again, now we're going to send you out, and you're going to have to walk around the neighborhood trying to get people to, you know, read the Book of Mormon to become better Catholics or better Jews or whatever. I mean, you're going to be talking to strangers about these intimate things. Do they like doing that?
It is a rigorous lifestyle. I served as a missionary in Japan 30 years ago, and it was not easy. One, just, you know, talking to strangers and going up, but doing it in a different language is very challenging. And so while missionary life is hard, is rigorous, it's amazing when they come back. It's always the phrase is the best 2 years.
Yeah.
Not the easiest 2 years.
I see.
Not the most, you know, it's not this one spiritual experience after another. It's like anything. It's a lot of hard work and heavy lifting. Far from you know, spotlights and yeah, and a lot of fun, but the process of serving, of taking 2 years and not focusing on your own agenda, but saying, hey, I'm gonna teach, I'm gonna serve, I'm gonna do volunteer work in this community, I'm gonna love these people, it is absolutely transformational.
I told them I really enjoyed their Broadway show,
yeah,
especially the doorbell song. How does the church feel about that show? And I know initially there was some concern, but my feeling is that they've sort of come to embrace it in a way.
Well, I think it's more, and this is a really interesting thing with President Nelson. You know, it's you can be offended by anything and everything, and I think we have to transcend that. But President Nelson has also focused on this idea that it's, we really shouldn't be the Mormon church, because we're really not the Mormon church. In fact, he put out a statement of just a few weeks ago, really challenging everyone, the media included, to use the proper name of the church, which is the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, because that's the focus. And while some people say, well, is that a rebrand? Is that a, no, it's really a recommit. He has really called on the membership of the church to live their lives with ever more attention to the life of the Savior, Jesus Christ, to know him better than you know him, to remember him more often than you remember him, and to serve him more valiantly than you currently serve him. And if you do that, you're going to be better. The people around you are going to be better. Communities are going to be better. And again, that's what really leads to the right place.
But Jesus is invisible. And there are religions that believe that you have to be born again. You have to have this emotional experience to really understand and follow the teachings, follow the path. What does the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, there's too many syllables in that. What does the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints believe about that? Do you have to have this kind of emotional conversion encounter to do it right?
There is a testimony and faith come to people in very different ways. To some people, it is that emotional, you know, burning in your heart, or a real amazing spiritual experience. To some people, it's just more of a certainty. It's a quiet confidence. Mm-hmm. And so there's no prescribed.
That can't be taught then. That just happens, doesn't it? I mean, we call it grace. If you don't,
yes.
I mean, we've been told that, if you have trouble believing in God, there's really no way you can wish it to be true. God just decides to grant you that, and then you have your daughter. And my wife, if I'm allowed to, she doesn't like me talking about it.
you may be in trouble tonight.
but she always thought, that's really unfair. So in other words, if I walk around with doubts about my faith, that's because God isn't giving me this gift, and that seems really arbitrary and unfair.
Yeah, and grace has an important role for all of us. We're all dependent on that kind of grace. But there's also an engagement. It's a draw near unto me, and I will draw near unto you. Seek me diligently, and you will find me. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
and then he will always grant that grace, or sometimes not. Like, for example, Job. Job was very badly treated and didn't deserve it. That doesn't seem right.
Well, and it's not about what's right. It's what about the lesson that you learn in that process. We go through really hard things in life. But I think we have to remember and gain the right perspective. I mean, you may have a financial challenge, you may have a marital challenge, you may have a child who, you know, gets addicted or has problems. All of those things are just part of the life experience. But the thing we have to remember, and again with hurricanes on our mind, you know, we need to remember that it is against the laws of nature and nature's God that storms last forever. Storms come and then they go. And there's great learning in those. I mean, I look back at my life, and a lot of the really great lessons are the lessons that were in the really hard times, the really difficult struggles where you can really take some step forward in your faith. Sure. In your confidence, in your fellow man. One of the things that I love about President Nelson is he has this incredible abundance mentality that is just contagious. Most people don't know that he spent his early career as a pioneer in heart surgery. He is world renowned. He was actually flown to China to operate, to do heart surgery on their most beloved opera singer in China, and has been a great friend of China since. But when he was doing the early research, he once described how he would get this group from all of these different research universities. They would get together once a month and they would share, what have you learned? What didn't work? Why did this go wrong? What happened here? And I remember an interviewer asked him one time, he said, wait a minute, you're telling me that all of these other surgeons and research facilities who were your competitors for dollars, for publicity, for, you know, journal entries and all of those things, you were getting together and you were sharing everything that you had broken through and created?
Yeah.
And he said, absolutely. He said, to me, they weren't the competition. The only competition I had was death.
Was death, right.
And so he...
That's the way doctors ought to think.
All of them ought to think that way. We all ought to think that way a lot more.
You got ideas for healthcare reform?
That would be interesting. I have not heard him weigh in on healthcare reform.
Because that's one of the problems, is that you have capitalists, some of the unhealthier capitalist elements getting in the way of doing what's truly right for people. I'm thinking of the way, you know, pharmaceutical prices are manipulated, et cetera. All right, so let's talk about practicing some of these principles. Members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints are famous for being great business people, you know, as witnessed by the corporation that ultimately owns us. You don't have a professional priesthood, correct?
I mean, that's correct.
Everybody does something else to make a living, and this is something that they do in the, you know, on the side. So, I mean, what do you do when you have to, for example, lay off people? You mean, you got to fire people who depend on you for a living, and yet you're trying to, you know, do what's right. How do you deal with that?
So the challenge is always, how do you do those things with compassion? I mean, right. There are times where you do have to make the hard decision. I found in my career, you know, when you're laying people off, never easy, always a struggle. You always figure out what's the best path. How can we get them a glide path out? But sometimes, too, if you're dealing with someone who maybe needs to be laid off for performance, that's a tough thing. But it may be the best thing that ever happens to them. I know, again, a lot of my lessons learned came from, hey, you're better than this, or you can do better than this, or you're just in the wrong spot,
yeah.
Which can also be a challenge. But when it comes to business, to me, there's a compassion component to it. And a real leadership component, something that we're obviously not seeing a heck of a lot of out of Washington these days, where you put people and principle first. We can solve most of the problems that are out there. I'll tell you, just as an aside, you know, I went back to Washington as a chief of staff, not as a political person, but as someone who had spent 20 years doing business consulting. And, you know, I was shocked. You know, most of the battles back there aren't left and right. They're people in power against everyone else. Mm-hmm. I firmly, passionately believe we could solve 94.5% of the immigration issue in an afternoon on the floor of the House and the Senate, because everyone agrees. Mm-hmm. Everyone knows we need to have border security of some sort. We need an entry exit system. We need to be able to tell who comes in and who goes out. I mean, if Disneyland can tell me where my family is at any moment in the park for 3 days, surely, you know, we can figure that out. We need more H-1B visas and so on. But you have people in power and you have outside groups on both the left and the right who raise hundreds of millions of dollars every year. It is the industrial complex.
And I've been a part of that. I mean, I ran for office once 14 years ago now, and there are people who make their living by creating fear, because that's what makes people give money, and
that's
money
right.
is what keeps those businesses going.
That's right. We call it the shampoo bottle model. Remember what we used to say on the shampoo bottle? Lather, rinse, repeat. Lather them up, get them angry and frustrated, let them rinse that off with a nice $50 contribution, and then repeat. But on so many of these issues, one of the things that President Nelson has really shown, that even on something like immigration, we have to look at it differently. Compassion and rule of law are absolutely compatible principles when it comes to immigration, when it comes to healthcare reform, all of these things. They can line up, but too often we abdicate. I don't think we're nearly as divided as a nation as we think we are.
I think you're absolutely right about that.
But again, loud and strident voices on
both
ends.
That's the nature of our, the nature of our democratic system is, in every single race, there is a winner and there is a loser. And the consultant will tell you, you can run the most moral, upstanding campaign in the world, but if you lose, you can't get anything done. So what you have to do is get people who are ruthless enough to win and then mature enough to forget all that when they get in office and compromise.
Yeah, and I think one of the interesting things, too, is this is also a we the people problem. Again, we talk about how divided we think the nation is, and the people on the far left and the far right are deeply divided. But the country as a whole is more center left, center right.
Yeah.
But the interesting thing is the people in the center left and center right have started to disengage. They're not taking polls. They're not participating in the process. If someone wanted to say what's going to be the difference in the midterms, it's going to be who figures out how to engage the now disengaged, the people who are just exhausted by the shenanigans of both parties.
And the internet has exacerbated this, because now everybody's got a voice. And and you figure if this we just don't want to play. Right.
Yeah.
If this is these
we're
are
taking care of our families and going to work
you
doing what we're supposed to
have your flame wars. we're shutting off the computer. We don't want to play that game. All right. That's all. Very interesting. Now there's at least 1,000 people listening saying, ask them about the underwear. So what's with the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints undergarment?
So holy or religious garments have been part of tradition for eons of time.
True.
And the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints is the same. It is really an inward expression of an inward commitment, of covenants that we make in holy temples that help us, again, live better, be better, do better, become
Who started
more like
it?
The Savior. It goes all the way back to Joseph Smith.
To Joseph Smith.
Yeah,
huh?
To the
so
restoration.
So he wore the special underwear?
In the early days of the church, those were just rolling when he was martyred, and then Brigham Young, of course, was next, and that continued to evolve over time.
So it just makes you feel, closer to... I mean, Catholics will sometimes wear what they call scapulars.
Yeah,
tags,
that's right.
And, of course, Jews have the thing with the tassels.
That's right.
So
it
makes you feel closer to God.
That's right. And as a reminder of covenants that you've made, commitments to family and to the Savior. So it's a constant reminder that way.
I still don't understand the planets.
The planets.
You get your own planet.
I mean, we believe that that people will have the opportunity to become like God.
Mm-hmm.
And so it is, when the Bible says worlds without end, that's what we believe.
So there is another universe out there just where everybody's a God?
I haven't seen that far into the future, so I...
No, but I mean, if that's there's a lot of people in the world. I know the universe is big.
That's right.
But a lot of all-powerful people, that seems like trouble.
Yeah, if they were mortal, yes, yeah,
I see.
Yeah, that's
guys,
right.
They are able to use the power wisely.
Yeah, that's I wouldn't trust myself with any of those right now. Let alone my kids, I'd never trust them.
Just a whole universe of people with their finger on the red button.
Yeah.
Well, it's been delightful to meet you, Boyd, and I appreciate it. That's very interesting. And so, are you traveling the world with the President Nelson?
I mostly do my commentary and my work from my desk in Salt Lake City. Yeah. But we are, going to some of these places around the world as he travels. We certainly cover that through the Deseret News and also mm-hmm. through the church news. But he is keeping just an extraordinary pace as president. And this is interesting, too. He felt recently that he needed to go to Puerto Rico. And so he went there last weekend. And I think for the first time in the history of the church, President Nelson speaks seven languages. And he delivered his entire talk to the members of the church in Puerto Rico in Spanish. And he was in Puerto Rico and in the Dominican Republic.
Yeah.
And delivered the entire speech in Spanish.
Wow.
And again, Spanish is probably the largest language in the church right now. Again, with over 16 million members worldwide, most of them outside the United States of America. And so President Nelson is going to continue to hopscotch the planet. And not just as a big tour. You know, the church does so much in terms of humanitarian effort, educational pieces. They have this wonderful thing called the Pathway Program that allows people around the world to increase their education level so they can increase their skills, so they can increase their job opportunities, so they can provide better for families, make a difference in their community. And it's really the old Scottish saying, you know, thee lift me and I'll lift thee and together we'll ascend. I think that's President Nelson to a T. And I think you'll see that at Safeco Field on Saturday, where he's gonna challenge the members to live better, to do more, and as I said before, not to just serve the people in their congregations, but in their communities, because there are people who need help, and we can do that.
I thought the old Scottish motto was "Let's meet for beers after work
at the pub." Yeah, see, but we wouldn't know that.
That's right. That's right. You wouldn't know that, would you? Same thing with getting a cup of coffee at Starbucks.
That's right.
Right. Boyd Matheson is the opinion editor for Deseret News and former chief of staff to U.S. Senator Mike Lee. Boyd, great to meet you.
Hey, great to be with you, and appreciate your work in elevating the dialogue to principles, to things that matter. Thanks so much.
Thank you.